You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome to episode 201 of Australia's premier tech talk show, Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. Today we ask, what's in a name? Well, if talking domain names, there's plenty. As more and more businesses embrace the online world and move into cyberspace, the search for the right domain name is becoming quite a challenge. The highly sought after .com is truly a global namespace, and as a result, it's available for anyone in the world to register a name of their choice with no eligibility checks. It really is a free-for-all. Then there's the Australian.au namespace. At least here, there are eligibility checks to ensure that the name being requested resembles either the company name or the business activity in which the company or business is engaged in. If you didn't know, you must be a registered business or company to register in the .com.au or .net.au namespace. No one owns a domain name. Like any service or license, it's subject to renewal. And if whoever is the current lessee of the name continues to pay the annual registration fee, then no one else can take it away from them. Because domain names are cheap, most companies buy up anything and everything that could benefit them in the online world. This means newcomers find choosing a domain name all the more difficult due to those who have gone before them, snapping up popular or descriptive domain names. Cyber squatting is the process of buying domain names and collecting popular or descriptive names in order to sell them to those who want them for rather large amounts. This practice is not illegal, but it's damn annoying for those of us who genuinely need or want a particular domain. Fortunately, it's not as prevalent in the Australian namespace as it is in the .com or .net world, but nonetheless, there is evidence of it here in Australia. But there seems to be a current tightening on the .com.au eligibility, as experienced by Dr. Ron only last week. Paul Twomey is the president of ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers, which is a not-for-profit organisation that handles IP address space allocation. Recently, he announced the removal of an industry designation of a domain name, such as .com or .net, so an international company can be just their name. So in the not-too-distant future, you might just visit www.apple or Microsoft. This is a positive move forward for big business, as they will no longer need to register their name in all other global namespaces. Or will they? We're all creatures of habit, after all. The good news is that the new namespaces cost several thousands of dollars to register, not the peanuts that traditional domain names cost. This will hopefully discourage cyber squatters. But is this just the beginning of the namespace revolution? Today on Tech Talk Radio, we'll be speaking with George Pongas, the COO of Domain Registry and web hosting services company Domain Central. George has broad experience in all aspects of internet, specializing in domain names and application-hosted services. This includes direct experience with ICANN domain policy. Domain Central was awarded winner of Australia's 2007 Deloitte Technology Fast 50 Award and ranked second fastest internet company in the nation, achieving a sixth place overall.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
If you're looking for a cost-effective, almost disposable laptop, then Adam has one for you. The iPhone cracks 10 million sales, Google to put ads in online games, credit card fraud explodes, and Vodafone 3G upgrade delayed to 2009. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, more personal data goes missing in the United Kingdom. Apple is expected to unveil new laptops this week. Palin email hacker pleads not guilty. YouTube teams up with CBS. And bogus Telstra deals are just too good to be true. Welcome to Tech Talk News. A laptop storing data on around 100,000 pensioners has been stolen in the United Kingdom. The Daily Mail reported on Saturday that names, national insurance numbers and salary details had been stored on the computer, which was in a handbag snatched last month from an employee of an accounting firm. The firm said police had been told of the theft and its clients informed, who in turn had contacted all the pensioners whose data had been stolen. According to a representative of Deloitte, no addresses or bank account details were stored on the machine, and the laptop is protected by security measures, including startup and system passwords and data encryption. And in an unrelated incident on Friday, members of Parliament demanded a cultural change in public sector data handling as it emerged a computer hard drive, possibly holding the private details of armed forces staff, was also missing. The Ministry of Defence said its IT contractor, EDS, could not account for the portable drive, which could contain the names, addresses and passport numbers of up to 100,000 Army, Navy and Air Force personnel. An urgent investigation by the Ministry of Defence is underway to establish what the drive actually contains. Officials stressed that they were currently treating the case as a potential data loss. Ministers are understood to be furious at the development and are insisting that it be resolved as quickly as possible. Apple is expecting to unveil new notebook computers this week. Email invitations bearing the message, "The spotlight turns to notebooks," have been sent to a lucky few for an event on Tuesday morning at Apple's headquarters in California. Apple executives hinted at a new computer design earlier this year without providing specifics. Analysts believe that Apple might be giving its MacBook Pro line of laptops an overhaul and may be shifting from plastic casings to more stylish and eco-friendly aluminium. A 20-year-old Tennessee man pleaded not guilty last week to hacking the email accounts of United States Republican vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin. David Kernell entered the plea in a federal court in Knoxville on Wednesday, the same day prosecutors charged him with intentionally accessing Mrs. Palin's email account without authorization. The Age Tech reported last week that Mr. Kernell, an economics student at the University of Tennessee, was brought into court wearing handcuffs and shackles on his ankles. He was released without posting a bond, but the court forbade him from owning a computer and limited his internet use to checking email and doing classwork. Kernell was also restricted from discussing the case with any potential witnesses, including his roommates. Prosecutors will allege that Kernell reset the password to Mrs. Palin's personal email account, then accessed the account and read its contents before publishing screenshots of the email to a public website. Google's flagship video sharing website, YouTube, has teamed up with television network giant CBS and started running full-length TV shows from CBS archives. In an effort to boost advertising revenue by adding professional programming, YouTube will now feature a mix of archived CBS shows, including Star Trek, The Young and the Restless, and Beverly Hills 90210, available for free as full-length episodes. The shows will have a full-length badge to distinguish them from shorter clips and, according to YouTube, will be available in a new theater mode to improve viewing experience. The new partnership will put YouTube in more direct competition with Hulu, which is a comparatively newer service featuring full-length shows from News Corp's Fox Networks, NBC and CBS. Hulu also has a YouTube channel which features short clip versions of its shows. And a call centre contracted by Telstra to win back customers who had moved to competitors has admitted that some staff might have behaved unethically. A report by the Sydney Morning Herald last week reported concerns that TSA Telco Group had been harassing ex-Telstra customers, including those with their numbers on the Do Not Call register. TSA call centre workers are reported to have made false promises of lower prices, false promises of faster speeds, and even tried to sell plans that didn't exist, all in an effort to win back Telstra customers and meet call centre sales targets. TSA pays its staff on a commission basis and is contracted by Telstra, but a spokesperson for the telco giant refused to acknowledge that there are any systematic problems at TSA, despite Telstra paying compensation to customers as a result of TSA's poor service. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Congratulations, everyone, for 200 shows. That's fantastic.
It's funny, isn't it?
No, it's not funny. It's sad.
Well, that's what I mean.
It would be funny if there weren't 20 million people suffering because of it.
Graham Callaghan, Adam Turner, and myself, Andrew McComb, and Lydia Davis, live from the United States.
I was really rapt to see Telstra doing something, but I just didn't like the fact that they were doing it all wrong.
That's really good to get that direct information from some of the big companies that we deal with in technology.
Microsoft Internet Explorer continued to lose its market share, would you believe, in September.
And
that easily.
Google know how to treat developers properly and stuff like that. Apple know how to screw everybody.
Oh, look, we're running out of time on our 250th anniversary show thing.
200.
I've got problems
read the
with...
cupcake.
She says she's there, but
the
she's
internet
not.
Fell off.
Is that what happened?
Must have done.
Oh.
I put my clock back for daylight savings an hour, and I've come up here 15 minutes early, and I can't believe you started without me. The show's nearly over.
Till next week. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Show how many?
200.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Showtime.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
So what app's this one, Dr. Ron?
This would be 201 based on what we just heard.
Good. Yeah, no, I'm still trying to comprehend
not
the 251. No.
You had excellent. A bit of trouble last week.
I don't know. My maths failed
confusing.
Me. Anyway, hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio, wherever you might be listening to us, in the pod, comfort of the tube in London, where we have listeners from time to time, or if you're listening to us on one of the many radio stations that take the program after we do it live. Queensland, West Australia, all over the place.
Tasmania.
Tassie? Absolutely.
Who's that voice?
Welcome Sorry. Aboard. Hello, Graham.
G'day.
Dr. Graham is in this evening. JD sent his apologies. He's stuck in some poor rural... Oh, no, I can't say that. He's stuck in some city somewhere which doesn't have good broadband, so as a result, he was going to hopefully come in and be virtual like Lid was last week, but didn't quite make it. But anyway, how are you both? Has it been an interesting tech week for you? Let's not talk finances.
It's been crazy busy. I don't know what the problem is. Worldwide recession, economic meltdown. Why? That's all meaningless to me. I'm knocking work back at the moment. I'm so busy. I cannot stop to scratch myself.
I know I said to someone the other day, bring on this recession.
Oh,
I don't know what's
yeah.
going on out there, but nonetheless.
It's great for business. Great for our business anyway. How about you guys? Yeah,
as long as you're not relying on imports, I think. The Aussie dollar's not doing too flash. I think last time we checked, hey, and if you're listening to us on the pod, forget about what I'm about to say, but I think it was about 66 cents to the US dollar going down. How's that? 30 cents it's dropped in the space of 3 months.
It's quite a lot. Quite a lot, especially when it was about to hit the dollar not so long ago.
No, exactly. Mm. I would have thought China needed commodities for their silicon, especially copper. You know, they probably get those sort of things from Australia, I would have thought.
Yeah, they rip minerals. It off the side of the train lines
that's right.
Power systems, yeah.
But
the export markets.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely shocking.
But they've built the birdcage and the Olympics are over and done with now, so they right. can scrap all that. They've got no need to buy new copper
you
from
think
us
that's
anymore.
What they'll do with it. They'll melt it all down and build stuff out of it.
Sell it back to Connex or something.
I could do.
There's a thought.
A world of opportunity always.
Absolutely. Yes. Anyway, if you'd like to participate in the banter, you're more than welcome to. You can come and join us if you're listening to us live on chat.techtalkradio.com.au. And our regulars are there. Good evening to you all listening, no doubt. And a bit of correspondence this week. Firstly, I have an apology to make. The Gremlins got into the newsletter this week, and as a result, the links didn't make it there. Thank you for the emails that I got this morning saying, where are the links? I know that's an important part of what you guys subscribe to for our newsletter. And, that's what happens when you do it at 11 o'clock in the evening. Dr. Ron, you have some correspondence there from one of our regulars, too.
I do. I have a message to Warwick. Warwick was the winner last week of our MaxTor OneTouch 4 Mini.
He's on the chat at the moment,
too.
Oh,
is he? That's excellent. Hi, Warwick. 250-gig external hard drive. Warwick, it's on the way. It's okay. Hold on. I won't forget you. It's in the mail, like the check that's in the mail.
I love giveaways. Did you know I gave away an iPod the other day? I was on ABC Radio, and we were talking about the best new sort of tech things
what
that
sort
could
of
come
iPod
along.
Was
You've never
it?
Given me an iPod.
No.
No, I'm not allowed to. That's a problem when you're on this side of the microphone. You can't keep the good things. Well, Adam does. But yes. But this thing I did on ABC, we were taking callers and working out what the best new tech idea would be. You know, what could we live without? Or what couldn't we live without? And one of the callers came in and said, how about a shopping trolley with a barcode reader and some gadgets so you can plug your headphones in and wirelessly get all this stuff? And I said, what a great idea, because you could scan your goodies as you put them into, like, it wouldn't cost much these days for something like that in a shopping trolley.
So it scans and adds up your shopping trolley as you go.
As you put your groceries in, you can.
And what are the headphones for?
Well, so you can listen to music rather than that pipe rubbish.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was really good. So
I think there's two separate ideas in one.
Yeah, anyway, that was a bit of fun.
So welcome to our Adelaidean listeners. I'm sure there's probably a few out there. Cool. Hey, I built a new PC on the weekend.
A new PC? Another new PC?
Yeah, because I felt the urge to upgrade,
right,
because that's what you do these days.
Right.
I hadn't built one for probably about 6 months, and boy, does the technology change. You get the, you take the lid open, you go, what are all these new leads in the power supply box for, and all that sort of stuff.
But could you figure out how to put the processor on the mainboard?
Oh, yeah, little four springy things, because I bought an Intel quad-core thing.
Yeah.
Quad-core's amazingly cheap, $290 for an E6800 or whatever they are.
It's fantastic
at the
technology, isn't it, these days? You can build a PC for not a lot of money.
No, exactly right. But the thing that I was really impressed with was the boot-up BIOS these days.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can actually turn the PC on, and before it even goes anywhere near the operating system, it says, what would you like to do? Boot to the operating system, boot to web browser, boot to Skype, boot to instant messaging.
You got so one of those BIOSes.
All on the board. So you can actually be surfing the net within about 5 seconds of turning your computer on.
So it sounds like the motherboard has its own operating system there, which you can use.
It does, in BIOS type memory, in hardware memory.
So it's like a very cut down or basic version of an operating system.
It'll be one of the Linux variations.
How clever, isn't that?
What a great idea.
That's a fantastic idea, yeah.
So I thought that was really good. Anyway, I tried it. I logged in and it comes up with its own proprietary little web browser, which looks very realistically like Firefox. And
that might not be a coincidence.
Maybe a reason for that.
Exactly. And off she went. It was a fantastic little experience. It just logged on straight away. I had to put my proxy server details in, but other than that, if you were at home, probably it would work straight away.
Most people don't need to add a proxy server in.
That's right.
Configured.
So
yeah,
from turning your machine on, within 5 seconds, you've got Skype for telephony.
Yep.
You've got a web browser for checking out what's on at the movies, if that's the way you want to do it. And you've got instant messaging. Obviously, you don't get mail because you need to pop and it has to pull it down and save it somewhere. But if you've got a web mail client.
Exactly right, yep.
You could do it that way.
Outlook Web Access or Gmail or whatever it is you might happen to be using, yeah. And if you want to edit a document or look at the rundown for the show, you can go to Zoho and do all your documents there. You don't need a lot else these days, really.
Absolutely. So I just thought that was a really nice experience coming to build new devices and things like that. And it was very easy to put together and cheap. Gosh, they're cheap. I can't believe how cheap they are.
And, of course, everything's on the mainboard too these days, and you don't need to worry about a separate sound card or a separate network card or all of those things. They're all built in on the mainboard.
What's this plug anything into one of those ports on the back of your sound card now, and it says, what did you just plug in? It asks you. You don't have to plug the speakers into the green one anymore.
You don't have to plug the right thing in the right socket anymore.
Or does it detect what, or you tell it what you've plugged in to what socket?
It senses that
it detects that something's been plugged in, and it asks you what it is.
That's evil, isn't it?
It is. It's a bit wrong, I think.
It's very wrong.
I think if people can't figure out that you plug the green plug into the green socket, then there's something probably not quite right.
You shouldn't be plugging things into the computer.
That's right.
Yes. A regular Tech Talk radio contributor, GD, hello GD, sent us an interesting email during the week. 30 years on. So it's not really news. It's 30-year-old news.
Well, it's the anniversary.
It is. A UFO mystery is still vivid. GD says, every time I drive down Bell Street, Pasco Vale, which is a suburb in inner Melbourne, and past the Valentik Memorial, I wonder what really happened. It was Victoria's very own X-File, a world-famous mystery that remains unsolved 30 years after a young pilot disappeared over Bass Strait.
Oh, I remember this.
Do you remember this? Steve Roby remembers it like it was yesterday. The now-retired air traffic controller was working the night shift at Melbourne Flight Service Unit on Saturday, October 21, 1978, nearly 30 years ago to the day, when the call came in at 7:06 p.m. The pilot, Frederick Valentik, was flying from Moorabbin Airport to King Island to pick up some crayfish and reported that a strange aircraft was playing a game with him and he wanted to know if any military planes were in the area. Both men were puzzled as there was no known air traffic in the vicinity apart from the 20-year-old RAAF Air Training Corps instructor's plane. Mr. Valentik reported that the unknown aircraft had four bright lights and had buzzed him a number of times at great speed. He said it's got a green light and is sort of metallic, it's all shiny on the outside. He went on to describe the object in more and more detail, and he said it was hovering above him, which he thought was very strange, and then he disappeared. The pilot disappeared, the plane disappeared, no one was ever seen or heard from again. Mr. Roby, who was the air traffic controller, is now 61 years old. He told the Sunday Age that Mr. Valentik was obviously distressed. He was not prepared to say he believed Mr. Valentik had been abducted by aliens, but Mr. Roby said he could not explain the incident.
Hmm. coincidentally, a light plane, unidentified, was seen landing near Cape Otway a short while later on.
Oh, 15 minutes after
yeah,
that.
But, right. Yeah.
Really? Or are you just making that up?
No, it's one of the possible explanations I read when I was looking at the
story. Is that right? So someone's done a bit of research into
yeah.
it?
Yeah. So it's possible that he, might have
faked his own disappearance.
Exactly. Yes, he might have been telling porky pies on the radio and just landed somewhere else and gone away and started a new life.
Thanks, GD. We like those sorts of conspiracy stories.
It's also possible
stories.
He was abducted by aliens. Those little green men are listening to us. G'day, guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
chat.techtalkradio.com.au
No, don't do that.
Like to talk
don't
to us. We'll take you to our leader.
All right, later on this evening, we're being joined by George Pongus from Domain Central. We're going to be talking about domain names, top-level domain names. They're the top of the list before you get to the .coms, .com
well, they're
AUs.
They're the very end of the domain name, so they're the .com or the .net or the...
Now, the landscape in the internet, obviously, it's changing quite frequently these days with names and with absolutely everything. By the way, did you know that Tim Berners-Lee started this thingy called the web 5,000 days ago?
5,000 days.
Not long, really, when you put it like that, is it?
365 and a quarter.
You've only got 10 fingers.
Yeah.
and they're not working for me.
The quarter just threw you.
Yeah.
So if you look,
can you just cut off a quarter of that finger for me?
If you look at where we've come in 5,000 days on this web thingy and what you can do, like 5,000 days ago, if you said to me then, this is going to be possible in a couple of years' time, we're going to go, No, what
that you'd
what
be able to boot up your computer
on?
And read email from anywhere in the world, and yeah.
Yeah, exactly. If you were to tell me that 5,000, everyone would go, oh, you're bollocks. No, sorry. Mm. But anyway, the interesting thing is where it's going to be in the next 5,000 days, which is another 10 years down the track.
Oh, 10 years, thank you.
Well, I'm just, yes. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that next week too. Anyway, enough of the promos. Let's get on with the show, shall we? Vodafone. There's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, coming and going with mobiles this week.
Yeah.
Vodafone has come down and Optus has gone up. You work this one out here. Optus are just really alienating, I think, the majority of their subscribers, for want of a better term. And they've actually put their prices for their mobile broadband up in the face of everyone else bringing theirs down, including Telstra, who not so recently brought theirs down. They, when the iPhone came out, they brought it all down a little bit, but we're sitting relatively constantly. But Optus have gone the other way, and Vodafone have also dropped their prices. But interestingly, their upgrade to third-generation technology is being delayed till 2009, and they're blaming the vendor, which is Ericsson. G'day, Mark, if you're listening to us in Boston.
So this is Optus's upgrade?
Vodafone.
Vodafone's upgrade. Okay.
Yeah, Vodafone Australia has blamed the Ericsson for the delay in the rollout of its national 3G mobile network, because I think Vodafone is probably the nearest competitor that's going to give Telstra a run for its money when it comes to coverage, I think, in that too.
But Optus have had speed problems on their network, haven't they?
Well, they've closed out. As Adam said last week on the program, they've actually stopped taking
adding new users
to their Fusion product because it's hit capacity, or their network is too small and they've got too many subscribers on it, which is pulling it down for everybody.
Yep.
But anyway, while the 3G network being built under a joint venture between Optus and Vodafone has been completed, representing 63% of Vodafone's planned 3G coverage, the remaining third, which is what's going to get them close to where Telstra is going to be delayed several months. The major cause, according to these guys, is Ericsson not being able to deliver equipment by the appropriate time.
But they have dropped their pricing from what you said.
Yeah. They've announced their pricing drop. Here we go. The day after Optus raised its prices on prepaid mobile, Vodafone cuts its price instead, showing competition is alive and well in the 3.5G wireless broadband market. Vodafone has returned to offering 5 gig for $39.95 per month on its 3.5G network, which is not bad when you think about it, and especially if they've got the coverage that they're planning to have. And if you look at the equivalent, five gig on Telstra, well, it's not even worth considering on NextG. The network is worth considering, but the pricing is
what's
probably...
What's that worth on Telstra?
Oh, let me click the link. Okay, talk amongst yourselves for a moment.
Graham, you're going to say... The link.
I was going to say whether that price for 5 gig is reasonable depends on the speed of your connection. If you're able to get reasonably high speeds on it, it's probably reasonable, but you wouldn't want to be paying that for GSM speeds.
That's going to depend largely on where you are and how you're using it, I suppose.
Exactly,
if you're
right
in the middle of a city, you'll have a pretty good chance of getting good speeds. But if you're on the fringe there and you're dropping between
a 3G network and a 2.5G network.
Could get a bit frustrating.
6 gig on Telstra is $119 a month.
$119.
As opposed to $40 for 5 gig on Vodafone and potentially even less on Hutchison's.
Yep, and thanks, Telstra, for making it 6 gig, not 5, so it's hard to compare the competitors against each other. That's really good of you. Well done.
Graham, might have been Telstra might have had 6 gig first and Vodafone came along with 5 to confuse it.
Yeah.
Confuse the situation.
Oh, goodness.
It is confusing, though. It is very hard to match apples with apples.
I don't care who did it first, who did it second. It's just frustrating to try and compare things when they deliberately make it harder by doing that.
Just to put it into the perspective, Hutchison's got 6 gig for $49. So they're cheaper than Hutchison's at the moment.
Okay.
By $9. But that's not everything. You need to be able to connect. And the thing with Hutchison's, you've got to bear in mind,
is
the interoperability between them and Telstra. And watch this space, because as the CEO of Hutchison announced recently, they're actually done a better deal when it comes to roaming on Telstra's HSDPA network.
The big drawback of 3, or Hutchison, is that it only works in 4 of the major cities.
Mm.
But, yes, if they get their roaming agreement in place and you can roam off onto the Telstra network, then that could be a fantastically good deal.
I'm betting the
prices on that are not going to be quite as good as they are now.
Warlock in the chat room went with Telstra due to NextG being all over Australia, and you get free Wi-Fi for internet at most Starbucks and McDonald's.
Yeah, but Starbucks is closing
down. We don't have Starbucks anymore.
Starbucks have closed, yeah.
We do have McDonald's.
Maccas are everywhere, though. You can't stop them.
If you want to go and eat that, good luck to you.
You pay your premium for your Wi-Fi. Good on you, Warlock.
Absolutely.
You don't have to eat it. You can just park in the car park and connect and to the Wi-Fi.
Oh, so you can you? You don't have to look at a password that's scribbled up on a whiteboard inside the restaurant.
Not that I know about.
You can just use it
I haven't
free.
Used the product. No, because you use your existing Telstra login. It's a Telstra service.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, I'm a NextG mobile broadband. I got rid of 3. I needed coverage where they couldn't give it to me, baby.
That's the primary reason for using Telstra.
Absolutely. And it's a premium service and you pay for it, and don't they know it?
Yep. Mm.
All right, let's talk about a few other things that have happened this week in the news. Steve Wozniak, Apple's creator.
Yes.
The man who physically got the soldering iron out and joined it all the bits together to make the first
Apple. He was one of the first
Apple.
Three. He was there when it all began.
Basically, he's saying that the iPhone is going to kill the iPod very shortly.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see it coming to there being no price difference whatsoever. You'd have the iPhone, which was as much functionality as the iPod had and more.
Mm.
And for same
not
price.
Not there yet. Yep.
Not there yet?
No. Biggest iPhone is...
Is it 8 gig? 16 gig?
Guess how many they've
biggest
sold.
Biggest iPod is...
Yeah, massive. 80,
160 gig.
160, is it?
Yeah, mine's 160 gig.
Ruth. Yeah, it's
I'm
a lot of
I'm surprised you actually
space.
Own an iPhone. Oh, iPod.
Are you?
Graham. A man who doesn't like compressed watery audio.
I like my podcast, though. I love my podcast, and I love to be able to listen to those shows when I want to in the car when I'm driving around. I do a lot of driving, you see.
So we all make sacrifices, don't
That's
we, in
right.
the course of time. We have to either choose the best mobile broadband network or choose an iPod player or something like that, so that you, yes.
So what does iWAS have to say?
Basically, he laments the limitations of the iPhone 3G. He agrees with the downgrade on Apple shares and believes that Web 2 revolution has been overfinanced and could lead to a mini crash in technology stocks.
Mm-hmm.
That's coming from a man who went off in his hippie phase and went and had rock concerts and did all sorts of things. Have you read the book? It's a fascinating read.
I haven't read his book, no.
In summer, if you've got a spare day or 3 or week or whatever over Chrissy, go and have a read of iWAS. It's very informative, if nothing else, which is his autobiography. I guess it is his autobiography. He wrote it, I think. Anyway.
Yeah. What Apple need to watch out is not that one of their products is going to kill another. It's that both of them are going to lose out to something that's better. The reason people go with iPods at the moment is because it works so well together with iTunes. Everything fits and goes smoothly. But being tied to iTunes is becoming more and more frustrating for a lot of people.
Foist, where it's been called on the chat.
Exactly
as we speak.
Right, yeah. And
what does that mean, foistware?
It means...
Every time you turn your computer on, you get iTunes has a new update for you, and they load up MobileMe for you. And
it's not iTunes itself that's the foistware. Quite often it's iTunes that people want, but you get QuickTime and MobileMe and goodness knows what else comes with it.
All this other garbage installed on your computer.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Or sometimes iTunes is the first where if what you really wanted was
QuickTime.
That's right. So it depends on what you're doing. But yeah, what Apple have got to watch out for is that someone else is going to come up with a product that works really well, smoothly together, does all these things, but doesn't tie you down to iTunes and Apple only giving you what Apple wants to give you and that sort of stuff. So,
speaking of Apple giving people what they want, they managed to crack 10 million iPhones worldwide, globally. Good effort, I would have thought.
It is.
But also at the same time, they've actually now dropped their gag order. Remember how the gag on the developers? So if you're developing product for the iPhone, you couldn't talk about it until it went through the iShop or whatever you call it on iTunes.
Yeah.
And download it that way, and you couldn't find out much about it apart from what they would tell you through the iTunes.
Yeah, but I presume that was to stop developers talking about products they were working on that later got rejected, and then all the bad publicity that comes from that.
Well, Steve's got his big switch. You can delete it off your phone if it's bad enough.
Yeah, but that's
enough.
The point. Yeah, he didn't want to do that to products that people knew a lot about, so that's why they stopped them talking about it.
Anyway, the gag order has been removed, so developers can now freely speak about what they're talking about, which I think is... coming from the United States, that's the place of freedom of speech. You would think they'd actually go with it. All right. So, and as I said before, iPhone hit 10 million sales, which is pretty good effort. I wonder how many iPods they've sold. I reckon it'd be up there, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
I've sold a lot more than that in iPods.
Now, let's talk about Google just briefly before we go to the break and come back with the couch and come back with George and all that sort of stuff. My friends at Google, well, there's another thing. I got a call from, once again, we were talking about this on ABC on Adelaide. Google has... brought one of its, you know, Google Labs. You go into Google Labs and there's all sorts of really strange and weird things that you can find in there that you would go, who in their right mind would want to do, use or plug into that sort of software? Here's a beauty. It actually stops you from, well, sending emails that you would not normally want to send, embarrassing emails, spur of the moment, you know, 11 o'clock in the evening emails.
I heard this being discussed, not by you. I heard this on Melbourne radio, Melbourne non-commercial radio. It's very, very funny. Yeah, go on. Describe it, though.
It's called Google Goggle, which you can, if you go into your Gmail account and go into your settings, go into Labs, and it's about the 6th, 7th, 8th one down or something like that. What it actually does is if you turn it on, and I believe it's only active on Friday nights and Saturday nights, how they work that out, I don't know. Obviously, you come back from the boozer and you're about to send a blasting
time
email to the boss or something like that.
Need, yeah.
Absolutely. Anyway, it throws questions at you, sobering questions, mathematical questions, and there is a degree of difficulty that you can select when you sign up. How easy from one to hard in respect to maths. But you've got to get all 5 questions right before it lets you send the email, which I thought was really quite innovative.
So you,
is that the word, innovative?
Yes. It's going to stop you sending that email that you might not really send when you were sober.
Being drunk in charge of a Facebook account should be a serious indictable offence in the state of Victoria. It's terrible. Yeah, come home from the boozer, as Andrew said, and you think, no, what seems like a good idea right now, I'll turn the computer on, I'll start emailing people. No, it's a really bad idea.
If you think Facebook is where the worst of this goes on, then there's probably some stories
Have you ever looked in your sent messages in your mobile phone the morning after the night before? Did that message really get sent from my mobile phone? Was it sent by me? Well, I'm sure.
So maybe Gmail should roll out to the mobile broadband side of things and put it in
people's market there. Definitely big market.
Well,
there.
Good on you, Google. I think it's got the thumbs up here
good
from the
work,
Tech Talk
Google.
Panel.
Definitely 10
Absolutely.
Out of 10. Yes.
And also, whilst we're speaking about the world's largest search engine, Google is going to put ads in its online games. It's expanding its empire with the internet giant now offering advertising development kits for video game developers. Is this going to be good or bad? I don't know how they're going to roll this out, but I suspect any game which requires internet connectivity, whether it be a PC, whether it be a PlayStation, whether it be anything, any game like that, can foist ads on. Which I thought, well, if you're paying big bucks for a game...
No, but this has always been Google's business model, is they offer you stuff for free and the price is that you get advertising along with it.
Yeah, you wouldn't be getting advertising.
Google have been masters of doing the advertising in an unobtrusive way and in a responsible way. You know, ads in text mode, ads that are identified as ads, the search results are separate, they've got a different colour background, you can tell which ones are ads and which ones are real. If they continue with their policy of don't be evil and doing these ads in a responsible and sensible and unobtrusive way, then why not?
Very good. It works on the same basis as AdSense done, a cost per click and a cost per impression basis. So as the ad gets served out, people, obviously they'll get advertisers will get a kick. Or sorry, Google will get a kick. And if people click on it somehow or other, then obviously they get a little bit more. That's how AdWords works. And I suspect there might be an auction system behind it too, knowing Google. They like maximizing things. So anyway. All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Graham Callaghan is here. Dr. Ron is here. Glad you set your clock right this week, Dr. Ron. You're a bit late last week. What happened?
I put the clock back 2 hours thinking, no, what did I do? I put the clock back an hour and I should have put it forward an hour or something. That was a disaster. I thought I was up here early and the show was nearly over.
Yeah, well, where do your loyalties lie? That's all I can say. And you were in a suit too. That was very impressive.
Didn't
have to dress for it.
Oh, I was going to get dressed up.
We should have brought the webcam in that night.
But what episode number was it again?
102.
No! Press the play button.
All right, when we return, Adam Turner, our regular correspondent in respect to all things technology, writer for The Age, the Sydney Morning Herald, is going to talk to us about laptops, and then we're going to talk to George about top-level domains.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panellists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panellists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed. Hello, welcome back, Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron, Dr. Graham, few apologies this evening, but nonetheless, they're here in spirit. I couldn't help but notice, Dr. Ron, you've got something. You used to have a sizable laptop on your desktop over there on the other side of the panel. It shrunk somewhat. What's going on?
Yeah, sizes and everything. Well, let's talk about it when we come up to the gadget of the week, but I have a new device sitting in front of me.
Have you?
Yeah.
What was your buying? Well, you didn't buy it. It's your beloved's, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
What was her buying criteria for it, do you know?
It had to look good. It had to fit in her handbag.
Yeah, does it have to talk to iPhones, iPods, iOS?
No. It just had to be able to run an office productivity suite, whether it be a Microsoft one or an Open Office one.
Mobile broadband?
It doesn't at the moment, but she wants to get mobile broadband, I think, so we'll be looking at that. But we'll be talking about that when it comes up to gadget time.
Okay, good. Well, we'll talk about that. In the meanwhile, speaking of gadgets, Adam's been down the same path in recent times looking to buy a laptop. Absolutely, I'm not going to steal any of his thunder. Suffice to say that here's this week's View from the Couch with the wonderful Adam Turner going shopping for laptops.
My biggest complaint about Asus's tiny EPC is that there's always a better one around the corner. It seems like a crazy thing to complain about, but I'm frustrated at how quickly Asus releases new versions of its tiny EPC ultra-portable notebook. It was only at the start of the year that we saw the original 7-inch EPC available in several different configurations. It was an amazing feat of engineering, but far too small to be practical for most people. By mid-year, we had the 8.9-inch units, with various options such as Linux or Windows. The extra 2 inches made the EPC almost useful. But it was tempting to wait, as there was already talk of 8.9-inch models with bigger keyboards, as well as talk of 10-inch units. Now we've got 3 10-inch units to choose from, the 1000, the 1000H, and the 1000HD. They include the option of a traditional or solid-state hard drive. I decided it was finally time to take the plunge when Catch of the Day listed the 1000HD for $499 online. I bought one for my wife. Now she's finally got a computer of her own and she loves it. Combined with a USB wireless broadband modem from 3, it's the perfect companion for a daily commute or just sitting around the house. At 1.4 kilos, the 1000 HD only just scrapes in as an ultra portable, but the 10-inch 1024x600 display provides enough screen real estate to actually get things done, and the keyboard is very user-friendly. It runs Windows XP Home with the 900 MHz Celeron processor and 1GB of RAM, handling Windows surprisingly well. The notebook comes bundled with StarOffice and Microsoft Works. Applications can be a little slow to open, but I had Firefox, StarOffice, Windows Media Player, Skype and Jungle Disk all running, and the tiny computer didn't miss a beat. Just to complicate things, ASUS also offers the EPC 1000 and 1000H, both which offer 802.11 DraftN, slightly longer battery life and a more powerful Atom processor. The 1000 offers a 40GB solid-state hard drive, while the 1000H offers a 160GB standard drive. If you check out the Australian website from ASUS, there's now 11 EPCs to choose from, and more if you want to shop overseas. As well as size, the EPC's price is also starting to creep up. If you're paying recommended retail price, then I'd say the 1000H probably offers the best value for money. And I sort of wish I'd opted for the 1000H so I could run the EPC on my 802.11n network, as my G network is currently at war with my microwave, the neighbour's tech and the private school down the road. Still, if you shop around, you'll find the 1000HD down near the $500 mark like I did, whereas the 1000H is closer to $600. In a few months, a better deal will come along, and at the $500 mark, I can afford to upgrade and give, sell, trade the 1000HD to a friend, with the permission of the lady of the house, of course. ASUS is already talking about new units with built-in HSDPA, which would be great assuming they work with 3. Now ASUS has also launched the S101, which features a 10.2-inch LED backlit display, Atom processor, Bluetooth 2, 4-in-1 flash card reader, and a choice of 32 or 64GB solid-state drive. Sounds pretty sweet, especially as it's only 18mm thick and weighs in at a kilo. The $700 US price tag is starting to blow out, although the S101's not really designed to fit in the same category as the 1000 range. It's more of a MacBook Air wannabe. Shedding 400 grams sounds good, and it might replace our 1000HD when I see it on special somewhere, although I'm sure we'll see a new model by Christmas. I'd say the 10-inch models are certainly the best EPCs yet, and those put off by the small screen and keyboard of the early models should definitely take a second look. Just be prepared to live with that sinking, maybe I should have waited, feeling.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
That sinking feeling. We've all had that, haven't we? Should I buy it now? Should I wait?
But if in the world of technology, especially with computers or phones, those sorts of things, there's always a better model just around the corner. So, and the prices are always going to go down. They're never going to go up.
I've had this argument with Adam before about PVRs, I think. Graham's exactly right. You're always going to be...
Personal video recorders, yeah, using acronyms again.
You're always going to be a step behind. Companies are always bringing things out behind whatever the latest bleeding-edge technology is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Technology is just one of those things that if you're still modern in 3 months' time, you've won.
Mm.
Plain and simple, really, isn't it? You know, you look at what are the major manufacturers. Digital cameras. Oh, the new model comes out every week, it seems like. It's a bit like iTunes, really, isn't it?
Digital cameras, personal video recorders, and music players.
Yep. That's all the same.
It's all the same.
Yeah, still waiting for my Bravia.
You haven't bought that? Haven't taken the plunge yet?
No, I can't get it yet. The new Bravias, they're sort of still sitting out there. I've really fallen in love with a device with internet connectivity to my television set without anything else. No wires. I think that's got to be good. Adam also used some terms in there. 802.11ns, Gs, Bs.
They're different speeds of wireless network.
And frequencies.
Yes.
And frequencies. The 802.11b and G, they're the first ones. They're the early versions of wireless communications.
Yep.
What's that, Graham? 10 meg is one, and the other one's...
Yeah, 54 meg.
54 meg?
Yep.
Now, we're talking speed, where you talk from the laptop to the wireless access point, and that's on a frequency of around 2.5 gig, and as Adam said, which made me laugh...
2.4 gig, exactly the same as your microwave oven.
Yes, it's
and
a war.
And your cordless phone, yep.
And if you've got someone up the street who's got one of those goddamn wireless video routing devices...
Oh, yeah, those things too, yeah.
It'll just obliterate... absolutely anything within Kiwi.
802.
But on the other side, your wireless network makes mincemeat of their television picture too, so that's why...
Oh, that's good. I feel better then. If
yeah, because I bought one of those things and I can't use it because it's got great lines through everything from the wireless network and the cordless phone.
Yeah, one of the questions I get was like, well, why doesn't my wireless network work? I said, well, you got a cordless phone? Have you got a video thing or whatever? Turn a few things off and yes... All comes good, really, doesn't
it? Are you
it?
Talking about devices that work in the same band as the G wireless or N wireless?
N's different.
N's, are you talking about G?
I'm talking about G, because right, so it's a free-for-all in
or
G.
B, yeah. Or B. So these days you'd recommend jumping straight to N if you had the opportunity?
5 gig.
Yeah.
It's brain frying stuff, but it's
well,
such
low power. Well,
the
other alternative is to go and get a 5 gig cordless phone as well. You can get those too.
Oh, that's good. Then I can fight with those things. So nothing's sacred, is it?
No.
Don't have a cordless phone.
Well, that's...
Use your mobile.
Yeah, that would be your
fry your brain with a bit of...
Dr. Ron.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
I like your solutions. Anyway, now, Dr. Ron, moving on here, you and I were having a chat during the course of the week about registering.com.au names.
Oh,
now, did
the
you
pain,
have...
the horror.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, no, it wasn't that bad. But...
Did you try and do it through Telstra or something?
No, I didn't. No, I used my registrar of choice, but... They're very...
What happened?
Well, I registered okay. I was registering it on behalf of a customer, and because my business name had nothing whatsoever to do with the domain name .com.au that I was trying to register, I got the 20 questions.
Really?
Do you want to register this? Yeah. Who are you registering on behalf of? What's the contact at the company you're registering on behalf of? What's their contact telephone number?
Yep.
And they wanted to know a lot of business details, which... They wouldn't normally be asking for if you wanted to register a .net.au or a .org.au domain name. So I was able to answer all the questions. It wasn't a problem. But, yeah, it's good in a way when you think about it because they're probably going out of their way to make sure that people aren't cyber squatting, which means they're not deliberately, intentionally registering names to which they have no association at all so they can just sit there and try and... on sell it for more money. So it's probably a good thing.
Cyber squatting is the practice of buying domain names, especially the cheaper they get. People do this. When I say people make a business out of this. They actually buy up domain names. They put a web page up there which has got advertising on it where they get paid per impression, paid per click type advertising. So when you mistype someone's address or you go to a .net or a different sort of domain suffix, you end up seeing their goddamn page, which is a holding page with full of ads.
If you type microspift.com by mistake or something, and because you've made a typo on the keyboard, yeah, it'll go to their site.
Yeah.
And they'll say, hey, well, you're looking for microsoft.com, but in the meantime, look at all this advertising we're going to throw at you.
Yeah, and that's how they make their money. They get these, you know, a couple of cents per page, but at the end of the day...
They get hundreds of thousands of hits a day from people just making typos.
Absolutely. If you've got even... You could run a server in the office, really, just... Plug in another domain name, plug and put it all to the run one sort of web server, and just get impression after impression after impression, and you make a fortune.
So in this country, they're trying to stamp that out. They're trying to prevent it by making the registration process for the .com.au quite well not difficult, but
anyway, we've had 5,000 days of web. And I've been a lot of domain name registrations in that time, I'm tipping. .com and .net have been probably the two biggest of everything. And yes, where to from here? Joining us in the studio this evening is George Pongas. He's the COO, which is the Chief Operating Officer of Domain Central. Hello, George. Thanks for coming in and having a chat with us.
Hello. Thank you for having me on the show.
Can you tell us a little bit about what you do for Domain Central? What is Domain Central?
Well, we're a domain registrar and hosting provider, so we register domain names for people and we enable them to get onto the internet and use their website, email, managed services, managed exchange, a whole lot of related services that they can use with or without their domain name.
Okay, a managed exchange, that's a mail client, I think. Yes. That's all the businessy side of stuff. So in essence, you're a provider of domain names and a provider of hosting facilities for people that want to get online.
Exactly right.
What do you do for them? What's an operating officer do? You put
out
fires?
I'm not exactly sure, but I pretty much answer all the questions that get thrown at me by staff and various other people. And I look after more the registrar side of the business.
Okay.
So I keep up with policy, find out what's going on in the wider world, if you like, the community as such.
I guess you're never sitting there twiddling your thumbs, George. There's always something to do.
Well, there's always time to twiddle the thumbs. but yeah, no, definitely there's always something to do too.
That's that sort of industry, isn't it? Do you reckon I'm on the money there? Well, I get 20 questions now if I want to register a .com.au domain, just trying to keep the namespace legitimate, I guess, for want of a better word.
Sure. Well, I mean, .au has been a protected space, and it, it's been deregulated over time. So once upon a time, you could not register a domain name unless it was very closely associated to your business, had to be a direct match or a variation of your business or service. Now they've introduced a new policy called close and substantial connection, so that pretty much means anything. And as of last year, they now allow you to monetize domain names. So what you're talking about earlier, which is putting up ads on a domain name, is acceptable now according to AU policy. So we've seen over a period of time deregulation of the .au space. Although there are still requirements such as having an ABN or an ACN to get a .com/au. And as a result, it's a very trusted space. So the consumers out there know when they go to a .com/au domain name that, you know, there's a real business behind it. Or there is a paper trail, if you like, to find out who's got the domain.
It used to be that you couldn't sell .au domain names from one user to another. Correct. You had to wait for them to expire and then pick them up. Is that still the case?
Well, it used to be you could sell them only if you sold the business or the business asset along with the domain name. So
Okay.
If you had a business and you sold your company,
But the domain name would still belong to the same business, so you'd have to sell the business rather than the domain name.
Exactly right. But as of last year, they had a panel. I was on that panel, actually, and we discussed whether or not the average person understood that they can't sell the domain name, and after some research into the subject matter, most owners of a domain name or registrants assumed that they could sell the domain name, that it was something that they owned. So they recently changed their policy, and you can now sell your domain name, providing that you wait 6 months from the time of registration, and also that you didn't originally register the domain for the pure purpose of reselling the domain.
And presumably the person you're selling to would also have to qualify to own the domain under the closest
exactly right.
One of the other rules, yeah.
Yep.
So that eliminates a bit of the cyber squatting potential that goes on in the .com and .net namespace, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
it
by comparison, if you're wanting to register a .com, it's extremely easy. Very cheap.
Yeah. $6 or something you can pick them up for, yeah.
Yeah, you don't need to qualify who or why, what you tend to do with the domain name, or there's no one checking to see that you meet eligibility. But there are some policy requirements. You do need to have an address associated with the domain name, et cetera. But it's a seven-year-old with a credit card can get online and register a .com. But you need to have an ABN or an ACN to register a .com/au or a .net/au.
What are your thoughts, George, on the relevance of, I guess, geospatial reference, .com/au being an Australian corporation or company in an Australian namespace, as opposed to .com?
Well, I mean, every country's got its own CCLD, so country
what?
code level domain. So .au,
Graham. Yeah.
So .au is a country code of Australia, .uk, United Kingdom, etc. In Australia, we don't allow anyone to register at the top level, so you can't register your company name .au. They only allow you to register.
We can't have techtalkradio.au.
No, you can have .com.au, but not. So that's a second level.
Right.
So you can register at the second level, but not at the top level. And I think it's a great whether you allow people to register at the top level or not. I think what's happened with .au is it's a very strong brand. It's been marketed very well in Australia, and is that level of trust where you do trust anyone selling online with a .com/au.
And some other countries do allow that, though, don't they? I think Canada do, and several European countries
do. I think Japan allow, if you're a Japanese company or corporation, you can register co.jp, but if you're an international company wanting to register a Japanese domain name, you can register your company name .jp at the top level.
I registered .co.uk the other day, which was, I just thought, well, I've got something that I need to register over there, and it didn't throw anything up to say that, hey, who are you? Are you really, a bona fide type sort of applicant for that domain space? And so I registered it. So that was pretty simple and straightforward.
One of our chat room people, George, says Australians should know about .id.au. What's that namespace used for?
That's for individuals. So, if you're a private individual wanting to have the domain name like george.id.au, because of the restrictions with ComAU needing to have an ABN, they introduced .id.au to allow individuals to have their own domain name. And that's where that. And so you can basically register that without having to have an ABN, ACN, or anything else. It just needs to be a name that relates to your own personal name or nickname that you're referred to by.
Okay, so not too many checks and balances.
Well, if we see as a domain registrar someone putting through Microsoft.id.au, we probably knock it back. Yeah, we get it all the time. We get it all the time.
So. Now, with those ID.au, that sounds like a great idea. Can you use that for email, and can you use that for putting a web page up? Can you put your blog on it and all that sort of stuff?
Anything you like.
Anything you like.
It's a domain name. It's a domain name in function, and no different to a .com or a .com.au. It's just that people aren't aware of it. So if you're to tell somebody verbally your domain name,
they wouldn't believe you.
Well, they'll probably go back and forget what it is, or by mistake put .com.au because we're kind of conditioned to automatically type in .com.au.
Yeah. Yep. So, but you can use email, and what you'd need to get someone to host that for you, unless you've got your own server at home or something like that. Yeah.
A lot of people actually redirect it to their MySpace page, for instance, or Facebook page.
Oh yeah.
Or an email forwarding or web forwarding service.
That's still a kind of hosting, though, isn't it? You still need to have. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
So AUDA is the Australian Domain Namespace Register. They're in Melbourne, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. One of the questions that I have, and if you're working closely with them, what determines the price of a domain name? Like, in theory, to me, it's just a database entry in a database somewhere which says, oh, this was registered to these people. How come some are cheaper? Why does the price vary?
Well, AUDA basically are a body that are appointed to look after the integrity of the .au space. So they look after policy, introduce policy, make sure that nothing untowards is happening in the .au space, and the integrity is kept in the space. The registry is Oz Registry. They actually maintain the database, as you said.
Are they a separate company?
Well, AUDA is a non-profit organisation. Oz Registry is a company. It's a private company, and they won a tender to look after the registry. Internationally is VeriSign, .com and .net, or look after the registry there. Nominate other .co.uk registry, and they're the regulator as well.
Just to get this clear, AUDA set the rules.
They're the regulator.
Oz Registry carry it out.
Oz Registry look after the infrastructure that makes it all work.
Yeah, so they own the nuts and bolts. They make the computers keep working and all that sort of stuff.
Exactly.
But AUDA set the rules and regulations.
Exactly right.
Do you know much about AUDA? How many on the board, and how does it function?
I can't remember the specifics of the board. AUDA.org.au is their website.
Yeah.
They function. There is a board as such.
Are they interested parties, like a Telstra involved in it, or is it more so individuals that are involved in the decision making?
There are industry participants on the board,
mm-hmm.
and that may be from the supply class, such as registrars,
mm-hmm.
or the demand class as well. In fact, I think they're just going to elect some new board members now. So it's a
democratic process about how the namespace evolves and works.
Exactly right.
So what's the process in a new namespace? We see .com.au's, .net.au's, and we're all familiar with those. What about new namespaces that come along? I'm sure that's going to happen because the revolution rolls on.
Yeah. Well, ICANN have announced recently that they are going to introduce a... they're opening it up, and they're saying, let's get some more top-level domains. Next year, it's hard to tell because it's an ongoing process and they're feeling their way through it, but they are going to tender and release a whole new swag of top-level domain names, which will be very interesting, and it will change the whole landscape of how the internet is used on different levels.
Hmm. We've sort of speaking a little bit earlier before we came on air about geospatial referencing. Now, Google's always been, and I won't speak specifically about Google, but as a user going to a search engine and typing in a series of keywords looking for a particular service or product in your location, how important, I guess, is the domain name when it comes to a geospatial reference? Is that of relevance, I guess, in the big picture? Like, are we going to start seeing even more defined, like we talk about .com.au being Australia, what are the chances of seeing .com.vic for Victoria, .com.queensland or something like that. Is that a possibility?
Oh, definitely so. Definitely so. And at the top level domains like .paris, .melbourne, .sydney, even more specific to that area. If Melbourne were to apply the tender to get their own top level domain, then you would imagine that if you were a user of the internet in the Melbourne area and you're searching for something, that .melbourne as a domain extension would be served to you very high up in the organic results of Google or Yahoo or whoever.
So as an example, George, the tourism people might register the name tourism.melbourne, and that would be it. That would just be their domain name. There would be no .au on the end or no .com.au or anything.
Exactly right. That would be the top level.
That will really change the way we see domain names, won't it? Well, the way we think about things?
Absolutely.
The top-level domain in your example would be the .melbourne. Exactly. So the tourism.melbourne would be something that whoever owns .melbourne would be able to then allocate, that you could have someone, you know, let's say the city of Melbourne bought .melbourne, then they'd be able to say, all right, who wants to be the tourism provider? And I'll give you .tourism.melbourne. And who wants to be the transport, you know, provider? And I'll give you .transport.melbourne. And, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Precisely right.
This exactly. is going to open up a wealth of, I guess, new ideas and new business opportunities.
New business models, for sure.
A lot of organisations based on, you know, .Broken Hill, .Cairns.
Exactly.
You know, you can come along and find out more about a specific town. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron and Graham in this evening. Our guest this evening is George Pongus. He's the COO of Domain Central, and we're talking all about things called top-level domains and domain names for the internet, which is pretty important for, I'd say, nearly anybody who's wants to get online as a business or even as an individual. Now, George, the top-level domains which we're starting to talk about now, like .melbourne, .paris, .whatever you want, they've got to be pricey, I would imagine, because they're truly global in a lot of respects. There's not a designator about what type of entity it is. It's just a name, isn't it?
What if there's a .melbourne in the United States? If there's a Melbourne as a city in the United States and they say, no,
we're in Florida.
In Florida, we want .melbourne.
Okay,
so we're going to have a bidding war between Florida and Victoria.
I know, put it up on eBay. That'll fix it.
Pretty much. Well, they're going to, it goes to tender. You need to present your business case to ICANN. They'll look at all this and see whether or not you can run your own space. If there is more than one, it's basically the best person wins out. If one of those people that are tendering for the space decides to go to auction, then it's the person with the deepest pockets wins.
It's a touch of like the free world society of capitalism, isn't it?
And where does the money go? To ask a naive question.
Actually, I'm not exactly sure, but I'm sure it goes to ICANN.
Not to a charity, I can tell you.
It would go to ICANN and it would go towards the running of the maintaining of all the plant and the planning of the system.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
The domain name system.
I haven't thought of that, but surely someone's going to benefit.
It won't be you and me either, just quietly. Not unless we put our thinking caps on fast.
So this is really going to open up a lot of potential. When do we see these new domains become available? And seriously, what's the starting price? Like, we look at a .com we mentioned earlier, you know, you're $6 will get you one
bucks,
of those.
Yeah.
You look at .com.au, maybe anywhere from $30 to $100, depending on whichever registrar you go with. Where do you go to get these guys and what are we looking at?
Well, I mean, I'd say that it would be anywhere between $250,000 to $500,000 to go through the process of tendering. And then just the infrastructure alone would be more having the servers and the equipment to maintain your own space. But you're not looking at it. It's not a domain name that you're registering. You're owning that top-level domain that you own, the .com, for argument's sake. So
yeah, it'd be like if you said, I want to own .com. Everything .com now belongs to me.
Exactly right.
Yeah, it's a massive commitment, isn't it?
A good example is a BMW. So BMW have BMW.com, and every time they have a new car release, they 320i.bmw.com. They can go and get their own extension, .bmw, and every time they have a new car release or any product release, they just put the 320i.bmw.
Can also do things like sell subdomains to their dealers.
Exactly right.
So you could have .vic.bmw and then put all the dealers within Victoria as, you know,
exactly right.
Whatever location.
Isn't that what the government does now? As in .gov.au, you go to .vic.gov,
right.
.nsw.gov.
Yeah, that's
same principles apply, really, doesn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. Yep. Only under this new system, someone could, it's in private hands. So you just buy the top-level domain that you want.
Exactly right. And they own that space. So, for instance, someone might go in and cyber squat their name in .com because they got in there before BMW did. Or there's a new product that BMW haven't even thought of releasing right now, which is 45392.bmw.
Yep.
Someone may have just taken a punt and registered that .com. They can't get that off that person, or they've got to go through intellectual property arbitration and take it to WIPO, which is where you go and fight out intellectual property disputes.
You'd have deep pockets for that too, I would imagine.
If you own .bmw because you are BMW, then you don't need to fight anybody. You
control
the registry
everything
operator.
That goes on under that,
exactly.
Now, one last question. Is there any reason, you say you own a namespace, and therefore what you do is set up subdomains under that. Mm-hmm. Is there any reason why you couldn't use it raw, as it were? You just type BMW into a web browser and you get the BMW homepage?
Well, I think it pretty much already works that way anyway. It defaults, most browsers default to the .com. Maybe if you typed in .bmw. Or .whatever. It would work. That comes down to how the browser vendors make their software work.
Well, the browsers will have to take into account now that they can't predict that something without anything on it like that might need something added to it.
It's going
to
change the way browsers work, and it's going to change the way search works as well.
It's going to have massive implications on search, I would imagine. Anyway, we'll wait and see what happens there. Ashkan on our chat has asked a question. So if I have an ABN and my business name is, say, Sun Industries, and I want to register Moon Fun, is that okay?
Yes, it is.
There you go. You just need to have something which I guess is similar or part of a project that you're doing. Or
we don't check or vet what you're going to do with the domain name. You warrant to us that you're going to. It's a closer substantial connection. The .au space is a complaints driven space. So if someone goes out and complains about what you're doing or that you don't meet eligibility, typically we check to make sure that that's okay, that you do meet policy, or it goes to AUDA and they ask a few questions based on the response. They determine whether you can continue to keep that domain name or not.
Okay, so there is an appeals process if someone wants to challenge it. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're talking to George Pontus this evening, the COO of Domain Central. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back very shortly. If you've got any questions, come and visit us on chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
Wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service just on it. How does it go? It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, He's caught him short. He's gone out for a drink.
You need to lengthen that stinger because it creeps up on us every time.
We're all sitting here. Hang on a minute.
Are we on?
Absolutely. Uh-oh. Anyway. And joining us this evening is our guest, George, from... sorry, I lost my notes.
Domain Central.
Domain Central, that's right. During the break, we've had a few interesting questions pop up on the chat at the moment, but AUDA, the Domain Registrar, we've covered a bit about them and what their role is. But a good question during the break was this .au.com, which seems to be floating around a little bit. What's the deal with that one, George?
Well, that's just a .com domain name that was registered a while back, back in the
Someone who
days.
Had the foresight into looking...
Exactly right. And they sell domain names at the, what's that, the first, the third level on that space. So they own the AU.com and they sell subdomains, if you like.
That's a good get, really, isn't it?
It's actually a really good space to... I wouldn't mind owning that one.
I know. You'd do well, wouldn't you? Yes. AUDA. Anyway, one they probably picked up for $6 as opposed to many hundreds of thousands.
Well, the interesting thing with no matter how expensive a .com is, it could be a $10 million domain name, the renewal price is always the same. It's only $7 a year.
Yeah. So where are we going to go? What's going to happen? We're going to see all sorts of domain names come onto the market. Obviously, geospatial is one aspect of domain names. What about descriptions? Obviously, you can do anything. Are they going to have any rules? Because there was always that. I remember, was it 12 months ago? There was the brouhaha about the .xxx domain names and stuff like that. Are there going to be things that we can do and can't do?
Sure, and that's what the whole ICANN process is about. They're going to be so if you want to have your own top level domain, you're going to need to present a tender and prove to ICANN that you can manage effectively the space, both from a technology perspective and from also a do not cause harm to others on the internet perspective as well. You know, they won't allow you to register a misspelling of .com, for instance. You know, Cameroon is an interesting one. Cameroon has the top level .cm. So that space or that country is one big misspelling. So google.cm.
People haven't hit the O in the com and they go to
exactly
a Cameroon
right.
address.
And they were monetizing, which is the practice of deriving money from ad revenue on those park pages that you see. They monetized the entire and wildcarded the entire space. And then they got called up for it and they're, I think they're releasing it relatively soon.
I think I've
again.
Read something about that. Yeah. That's very funny, actually, isn't it? Well, I mean, nothing like a good idea at the time, really, is
Well, yeah, that's what the internet's about, I suppose.
Absolutely. How are we going in respect to Australian registrations? Are we a fairly a country which likes to register a lot of domain names or compared to other countries?
Well, there are just over 1 million AU domain names. I think we're rapidly approaching the millionth com.au domain name. So I think we've got about 900 and some small change in com AUs and 150 or so net AUs and then the rest. Compared to .com, I think there are 70 million.
Ooh.
Who manages the .com space?
VeriSign do.
VeriSign, that's yes. right. I mentioned that earlier. We know the name VeriSign from security certificates. Yes. Same mob, is it?
Same mob.
Mm.
Now, what about... Just because we're in the wonderful world of mobile devices these days. .mobi.
Mm-hmm. We've got a techtalkradio.mobi and a ttr.mobi for our program.
Good idea at the time. Are they working, do you reckon?
They are. They're, I think it's a space that's embraced by all the mobile phone carriers as well. So Motorola and Ericsson and the like supported that space or that top level when it was released. The success of a top-level domain is based upon how well it's marketed at the end of the day.
Yeah,
like
it's all about
else.
User recognition, whether
exactly
the user
right.
trusts it and recognises it, yeah.
And the good thing about .mobi is that I think if you register a .mobi, they give you free apps to mobile phone-ify, if you like, your website and to make it friendly to WAP services or the like. So I think that's got some traction.
It's quite a challenge building websites these days because you just, you have the round table. What size do you want your website? And everyone sort of picks a random number and you go, well, why do you want that? And you go, well, who else is using what? And anyway, at the moment, I don't know what the current going sort of, because everyone's got widescreen laptops and not quite so deep and things like that. But the Mobi device was allegedly brought in so that you would be building applications that would fit, 320 by 100 and whatever pixels. But a lot of the new mobile devices are actually pretty smart. They can actually... Well, look at iPhones, for example, but even some of the earlier Sony Ericssons and Nokias and things like that can do the crunching for you and get it sort of somewhat readable. Wasn't that a condition of Mobi to actually sort of say, well, it's got to be readable for a small device?
Well, exactly. And I think their aim is that, you know, you can't almost get it right when it's a dot Mobi. You have to absolutely get it right. So that as a user, it's all about end user experience. And as a user, I've got a mobile device. I, after a period of time, will automatically type in domain name dot Mobi because I know that the actual interface or the user interface on my screen will work as it's intended and not be a rendering close to what it's intended to be.
We've tried to use the KISS principle on the TTR.mobi site, so just try to keep it very simple. There's no
for those bandwidth impaired people, or
well,
people
that's
who have
the,
forced to use.
The whole point. It's for people who don't have a great deal of bandwidth, or if they do have bandwidth, it's maybe expensive.
Well, they're not on a data plan. And
they're not
on
a massive data plan.
For...
That's right. They're not going to have fancy flash software and things that you'd normally expect people to have on web browsers. So just simple, lots of simple text and try and make the links easy to navigate because people aren't using a mouse either when they're navigating .mobi sites.
Warlock was saying .mobi is great for internet banking. Makes sense, really, doesn't it?
There you go.
If you want to go to combank.mobi or whoever the big bankers are and all that sort of stuff, do your internet banking. There's a list for a question from Wazza. Is there a list of .mobi websites anywhere? I think there is.
We've got a very, very brief one on our site.
Have we?
Yeah, we do. But
should read it.
It's got our site on it.
It does.
Has it got any others?
No, it doesn't have our site on it. No, it has got others. But there are directories around where people are slowly adding the .mobi sites as they become mainstream.
Don't the .mobi people run their own directory of some kind?
Or? Oh, maybe they do, Graham. We'll have to have a look.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe just jump on Google. Ask the gods. They know all these sort of things, don't they? .mobi listings and things
like that. .mobi directory or something.
Yeah. All right. George, thank you very much for coming in and visiting us and spending an hour with us this evening. It's been most informative about top-level domains. I think we've got all sorts of information out of it, especially... I know, exciting times ahead. I don't know whether I can't remember whether I asked you this question. When are we going to start seeing these little guys, the big ones, come onto the
well? I think
onto
it'll
the
be,
web browser.
I think 2000 and mid 2009 is when they're going to have ended the or started the actual tender process. So probably won't be until 2010 and when they're starting to be released. Imagine well, second half of 2009 at the earliest.
Hopefully we'll have a global economy that can support the prices that looks like it's going to be up for auction, the biggest person can buy it. But, no, all right, well, we look forward to the changing landscape around 2009, 2010 maybe, after the auctions take place, and we'll take it from there. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. And, yes, if you want to register a domain name, check out these guys. It's probably a good domaincentral.com.au.
That's it.
Thank you very much. See, that's the way it works, isn't it? We all know. What do you reckon, Dr. Ron?
I'm going to register Dr. Ron as a top-level domain. What do you think about that?
Dr. Ron as a top-level...
Hard disk collection dot Dr. Ron.
Oh, don't start that. You'll get them all chatting and doing all sorts of things again. All right. Once again, thanks, George. It's been great.
George.
We'll be back with more after this.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Do no evil, Google sued for $1 billion.
Is it a job for government, though, or is it a job for ISPs to provide interlinks?
Hey, hang on, nerd alert. What?
The thing is, people put it on vibrate or silent, and you can't tell.
Which is which?
What do you mean, which is which?
You can't vote with your feet because there are no other options.
Oh, did I say that?
Yeah, you might have. 12 megabits, though.
Entertaining.
What's the problem, Dr. Ron?
Informative.
Has it got a network port on the back?
Independent.
Do they do that in some
other
countries?
Absolutely they do.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
She tells me.
Keeps your knees warm, doesn't it?
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Yeah, that's us, the panel, as we all plug back in and we're going to make longer promos, really, don't we?
We've got to give us more warning before we have to rush back to our seats.
What's this music?
This music's often underneath us.
Is it?
Yeah.
You should listen to the podcast, Dr. Ron, here.
Wow, anyway. Cicadas and everything.
Oh, it's Muzak. Anyway. Oh. Thank you very much, George, for coming in and paying us a visit tonight. It was
to have real cicadas. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Back in the good old days.
Back in the good old days. Reminiscing is not what it used to be, is it?
George has kindly suggested that he has some stuff for some Tech Talk Radio listeners, which hopefully we'll be able to bring to you.
Oh, good.
Yeah. In the not-too-distant future.
Might be able to get a discount on your next domain name you register or something like that. Yeah.
Anyway, stick with us, guys, and we'll certainly do. But there was a lot of interest on the chat room saying thank
you
to George for... calling past. Very interesting.
Can I mention something? Someone on the chat asked a question about somebody had a domain name registered and a competitor of theirs registered a similar name. It had a hyphen in the middle of it instead and stuff like that. And they wanted to know what to do about that. If the other guys were acting in bad faith, if they were trying to steal your business or trying to pretend they're you or whatever it is, go to AUDA. There's a complaints process on the AUDA website.
Yeah, but that's interesting. That's good. I'm in a similar situation, which I'll talk to you about off air. But in essence, there's a company which has started off similar company name, and they have similar domain name. They do a similar industry.
Yeah. Well, it depends whether they're trying to deliberately trade off your name or whether they just happen to have a similar name. Yeah. So there's a fine line.
Then it comes
somewhere.
Down to how deep your pockets are, really,
exactly.
Doesn't it?
Exactly. Well, there's an arbitration process, I think. So, there might be a way to solve it without... Yeah.
I'm in a similar position at the moment dealing with a customer. And he's just bought a business and he's been running the business now for probably coming up to 12 months. And he's boarded off these people and... These people still have the original domain name registered to them. They've still got a very old, outdated website there, but they've got a lot of...
Well, the domain name surely should be registered to the business, not to the individuals.
Well, I tried and tried to get it off these people, and in the end I said, look, just register another. There's a better one you can register for the business anyway. Let's do that, and let's just start actively
pushing
that.
But they should
that.
Be able to say that this is the business that registered it. I own that business, and
I might do what you've suggested, Andrew, and go to AUDA, see if they can help us out.
The other interesting thing, too, with domain names is because they are so cheap, and they are, they're cheap as chips when it comes to your business expenses, common business expenses. Go for gold. If you've got if you're out there registering, don't just get one. Get the .net, get the .net.au if you're going for .coms, and then that way you've got your... the first part of your domain name covered in all parts.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
And you can also register something to do with what your business does, and you can also register what your slogan is.
Yeah, and as George was saying,
anything that's got a close and substantial connection to your business, and it gets hugely expensive, particularly if you're a small business, to register all the different combinations of all the different.
Well, it depends how precious you have. Exactly, it does. Mm. But it depends on how precious you are with that particular product or service that you're selling.
Well, that's right. And that's why companies that have got slightly deeper pockets, the larger companies, do register all the possible permutations and combinations of their names,
Especially for those mistyped events. Like, I'm sure if you go to Qantas with a U in it, for example, you'll find your way to the Qantas page without the U. Simple sort of things like that, if you think about when you're online and doing things. Another interesting story before we move on in respect to getting a domain name. A colleague at the office has a business which he had registered. It was a .net.au. And the reason why he registered the domain name in the .net.au namespace was that the .com.au namespace had already been taken.
So, you see, that's an abuse of the .net.au.
Well, it is.
Yeah, because that's designed for network providers.
It is, but at the and we've got lots of them these days.
Yeah.
as a result, because he had the brand name registered and someone else before him had got the existing .com.au, he had to settle with the .net.au because he wanted something in the Australian namespace. Now, what happened literally about 2 weeks ago was he was just surfing the net and he thought, oh, I wonder if .com.au is available, probably some 2 years down the track since he first registered .net.au, and it was. So anyway, he jumped at the opportunity and he rang me up in great glee saying, guess what? And I said, well done, now you've got .com.au and .net.au covered. And then the next day he got a phone call from some poor soul, and I use the words poor soul, it was some inopportune moment really. A chap in another state had said, oh, I'd found this domain name and I'd just been off to register a business name, and in the time of me going to register my business name and coming back, he's bought it.
Yeah, well, that's the way it goes.
So, it's just a lost opportunity. So if you're out there, procrastination and domain names is not a good thing. If you can get them and you can do them and they're affordable and they're what you want, get them. Don't
bear
think
in mind
about
the rule is a close and substantial connection to your business. You don't have to own the exact same business name. You can go out and register it today. And, it's up to somebody else to challenge you later on.
And you must have an ABN.
But you do have to have an ABN.
Or
so
an ACN.
Yes, you have to own up.
Business number of sorts from any of the reputable state government bases.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be a proprietary limited company. It can be just a business name, but you do need the ABN.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's domain names. I've learnt a bit tonight. I'm quite excited about 2010 rocking up with all these great new things. This is going to be quite Amazing, really, isn't it?
We're going to have .ttr as a top-level domain. It's going to set us back a couple of bucks.
We better get some sponsors on board, Sunday Jim, if we're going to do that.
There goes the mortgage.
Absolutely. Well, the mortgage will be gone by then anyway, so.
Yes.
Oh, dear. The ANZ Bank, speaking of mortgages, I love your segues, Dr. Ron. You're just serving them up beautifully. The ANZ Bank is banking on iPhone to bring new business. How about this? The ANZ Bank has developed its own iFriendly online banking site in its first, and it's the first bank in Australia to do so, and joins a very select group of banks worldwide who offer such a service. Have you?
So it's a site tailored specifically to the iPhone.
Yeah, which means you obviously turn it sideways and it does something strange. Mm. Something. I don't know.
The question in my mind was: is there
people design your websites properly? They'll display on anything.
That's right. Make them generic, unless they've made an application designed to run on the iPhone. Is that what is that what it means?
Which bank?
No, the ANZ Bank. Is it an application for the iPhone?
Or yes,
is
it's a site designed specifically for the iPhone.
So it's not an application.
It's a website.
That's right, it's a website. And if you go to the anz.com.au, I haven't tried this because I don't have an iPhone, but I'm sure there's someone out there in the chat who can try. So if you're listening on the chat now and you've got an iPhone, and I know there's probably a few of you out there that do, go to anz.com.au. And it should automatically redirect you to the iPhone-friendly device.
Now it's clear as mud. I was going to try it on my Sony Ericsson.
It defeats the purpose.
Now, what you need to do is you need to find out what the identification string of an iPhone is, and put it and key it into your web browser here, and have it your web browser pretend it's an iPhone.
Up until recently, they couldn't tell you that, but since the gag's been removed.
Right.
People what are you doing, Dr. Ron?
People like Graham, what cause unrest? I'm typing
in anz.com.au into the web browser in my Sony Ericsson.
Not even an iPhone, though, folks. No. It's a dopey Walkman phone Sony thing.
It is. Oh. It is dopey, and it is a Sony Ericsson Walkman sort of
sorry,
thing.
Sorry, Sony.
Sorry, Sony.
Someone has just logged into the chat who goes by the name of D. Couldn't think of any other letters to type, so he's logged in as D. And he says, Commonwealth Bank also have an iFriendly site as well. So there you go. Not just the A and Z that's the first one.
And you were right. Which bank?
Which bank? Exactly. The bank with the money at the moment. They just went out and bought another bank because that's what you do in times
of... That's what you do if you're a bank and you make a gazillion in profit even when the
markets still didn't,
are bad.
Yeah. Still didn't hand on the full 1%. That word.
Starting with D. It's important to make sure all the... Yes, they're...
Now,
Board of directors are kept living in the manner that they've become accustomed to.
Absolutely. Nice. Now, you remember last week on the show, we were talking about Real DVD, and they were up in front of the courts in the US about providing...
Yeah, we were wondering how they could get away with making an application that rips DVDs and breaks the encryption.
Yes. Well, just further to that, a US court has banned the sale of Real Network's Real DVD copying software as part of the legal case brought by 6 Hollywood studios.
So the answer is, they can't.
That's right. In the first stage of the lawsuit, the court has ordered a stop on sales until October the 14th at the earliest, until the court can have a good look at what's going on. The case raises serious questions as to the rights of software companies and continue businesses in the face of legal pressures over copyright. Now, copyright is a huge issue on the net.
That's
from
right.
From simple things like copying and pasting from someone's web page through to music and video, really, isn't it?
Yep. And the balancing act between that and the rights of consumers to be able to use the content they've bought. If you've bought a DVD, you might want to play it on a particular machine or something, and you can't because of the protections and the restrictions. That's what things like this Real DVD case will make more clear and challenge some of the things that the studios have imposed on us. So, maybe there is a point to it.
I wonder if video is going to pose to be a similar, thorn in everyone's side in the next few years. Like music was. See, music
Absolutely. At
the moment is sort of... It's starting to settle down a little bit, isn't it? Because you can now buy music online, which doesn't have digital rights management associated with it.
Yep.
Off some sites. And you can move it freely from device to
finally,
device.
Finally, 10 years down the track, they're starting to catch up with the fact that people are going to want their music online, and they're going to want quality, and they're going to want freedom to put it on the device they want. So, yeah, this is exactly what's happened to music it's starting to make a lot more sense than it did a few years ago. It's going to happen to video eventually as well. So it's just going to take time because big old movie studios are as immobile and difficult to convince of new technologies as big old record companies were.
Well, aren't they one and the same these days too? Sony Music is also has Sony Pictures, and Warner Brothers Music has Warner. But I'm sure they're a bit like large corporations where the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing and things like that.
Well, to some degree, and yes, to another degree, they're all owned by the same rich, you know, person living in America somewhere. Who won't be named.
Anyway, Apple, that company.
And yes.
I love those segues.
Brilliant segue.
We're doing so well tonight, aren't we?
What have Apple done?
Apple have got brick rumours building. No pun intended.
What, iPhones that have failed the cracking process?
No. They're talking about...
I've bricked my iPhone.
I think they're talking about Adam's favourite little pet device, the Mac Mini here.
I've bricked my Mac Mini.
That's it. The web has been buzzing with rumours that a new Apple product codenamed The Brick... Why do they choose such names?
No.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Anyway, it would be announced in an industry keynote on October the 14th, which is tomorrow.
Or it might be yesterday, depending on if you listen to the podcast
last week.
Or what station you're listening to. Yes.
Absolutely. But,
it might be a while ago.
Yes, it could have been the other day. So just pop in and Google it, and you probably know the answer to what we're talking about.
Is this the keynote where they're going to introduce new laptops?
No? Oh, maybe.
Maybe.
Some commentators have guessed that the announcement, which is likely to come from Steve Jobs' infamous "just one more thing" teasers, would be a new notebook design or even a fresh Mac Mini.
There you go.
One wag even suggested that the brick would be a new operating system and that it was so named because it would smash Windows.
Oh, dear.
You've got to laugh. They're a dime a dozen out there, aren't they?
Good well, boys. You can bet that on the front page of the Apple site, there'll be a link to that speech once it's been made. So, you'll be able to watch it online.
Warlock says the new Mac notebooks are going to have their cases cut out of brick of aluminium.
They're talking about redesigning the cases, making them more environmentally friendly and all that politically correct
aluminium
nonsense.
Not very environmentally friendly, is it?
Takes lots of electricity to make aluminium and
all that
sort of stuff. So, But I must admit, though, the new we digress beautifully here. One of the motherboards that I bought, which was made by Asus, on the weekend, which had all this great stuff, has got this amazing power.
Which I always used to pronounce Asus.
I've always pronounced it Asus, but a lot of people pronounce it Asus.
Asus. Yeah.
Someone maybe can tell us the correct way to pronounce it. If you're in Asia where the company is probably founded, it's probably Asus.
Maybe.
I don't know.
No idea.
Anyway.
Carry on.
Their power-saving functions of CPU cooling and things like that, they're all becoming fairly green. How green they are, I'm not 100% sure. You don't believe all the propaganda you get on those beautiful, brightly coloured boxes and things like that. But if you visit their website, they've actually done some side-by-side demonstrations of how their motherboards work in power consumption compared to their competitors' power boards, motherboards. So I guess in the days where we start having to be a little bit conscious of how much electricity we're using, and let me tell you, your average PC is what, 150 watts at idle? Would that be fair to say, Graham, if not more?
It depends on what you've got in it. Probably a lot of PCs would be less than that, but yeah.
If you leave that on for a while, that's like having a big light bulb on in your house.
That was going to be the next point I'm making. You don't have to be a radical hippie tree hugger to be concerned about this stuff. Sorry to all the radical hippie tree huggers out there.
Have you kissed a tree recently?
But if you leave your PC on a lot, like I do, I leave my PC on, you know, when I'm out and so on, because it does things for me while I'm not looking, and I need to be able to remotely access it when I'm not at home. My PC's on a lot. You know, that having an intelligent power system on it that slows down the CPU and turns things off when they're not being used and reduces the power load, that can make a big difference to your power bill at the end of the year.
Mm, absolutely. I'm guilty of having machines on 24/7. I think we all are, aren't we?
I definitely am. I would have at least three computers running 24/7 at home. I run a small business from home. I'm not making any apologies for that.
Yeah, some of those computers are servers and
aren't
providing services.
They need
to
be operational and they need to be accessible 24 hours a day. But it does have an impact on your power bill, though, for sure. Mm.
We had a website of the week not so long back, which was designed for people like us. If you're feeling guilty, you can actually offset your carbon inputs by going there and paying them money or something, and they go and plant a tree on your behalf if you run a server.
I'm quite feeling that guilty, but
no,
I am
not
now.
Feeling
thanks,
that guilty.
Andrew. You've, yes.
Do you
now
pay?
I'm gonna have to deal with that.
Do you pay for your electricity, Graham?
No, he steals it. What do you reckon?
Yeah, so I wouldn't. Yes, absolutely.
He's got big coils in the ground underneath the power line and it induced down in the nature
that
strip.
Maybe you do need to go and make some donations to some charities. No, but if you pay for your electricity, what do you got to feel guilty about? It's a service and it's being provided to you. You're paying for it.
You're going to get hate mail over this document.
Oh, whatever. You think the power company should plant the trees? Is that your point or
what? The power company should plant the trees?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, to offset the carbon so that we don't all boil away or live under
water. Yeah, well, they should, because I'm paying them for the service, so if that's what they need to do, then they should go and plant trees.
Okay. You're not concerned that half of Melbourne's going to be flooded when the sea level rises 7 metres?
No, because I live a fair way up from the coast. So 7 metres isn't going to impact on me. Bring it on. Bring on the global warming, I say. Do your worst.
My cat's all for it. Can I just say that?
Your cat is.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
My cat. Vote one. Global warming. Yeah.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers.
And I've
got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
motorists have to give fingerprints. Now,
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600
kilometers. Don't open hands with those good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
I've brought a gadget especially for show and tell tonight at Tech Talk Radio.
Like those.
The gadget of the week is Acer's Aspire 1 netbook, which is what I'm using tonight live in the studio. It does not belong to me.
You theft it. You stole it.
I thefted it. It belongs to my significant other, and she purchased
it. Did you tell her you're bringing it up, or is she currently scouring the house looking for it?
No, she offered it to me. She said, why don't you take this up to Tech Talk tonight? I went, that's very kind of you. Oh,
thanks, Lainey. That's lovely.
Yes. The Acer Aspire 1 netbook is like a very, very small notebook. It's just designed to, well, not quite small enough to slip in your back pocket, but small enough to drop in a handbag or your man bag.
It's significantly smaller than your average notebook.
It's halfway between a PDA and a laptop, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot bigger than your average PDA.
Do you like it?
Yeah, it's got the same size keyboard as
what
most
processor?
Notebooks, hasn't it?
I'll tell you all about it. It's an Atom-based 8.9-inch 1024x600 pixel laptop. Runs your choice of XP or Linux, and where we bought it from the big black and yellow electronics store up the road, they just had XP Home as the operating system installed on it. It packs 802.11 B and G Wi-Fi, which we were talking about earlier tonight.
So you'll be fighting the microwave.
Fighting the microwave, but it's doing very well tonight, connected very easily here on the wireless network at the radio station. Up to 1 gigabyte of memory. This comes with 1 gig of memory, an 8 gig SSD or 2.5 inch 80 gigabyte disk, SD card slot optional, 6L battery. It will also sport an integrated WiMAX module when the networks finally light up, according to a review on Engadget.
Now, just to bring it back a bit, 8 gig SSD, solid state device, so memory. So instead of your hard disk, you've got solid state memory, so no disk that spins.
Solid state, no moving parts inside it.
8 gig,
isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. This is the technology of the future. Watch SSD devices; they're about to become big. We should talk about them soon.
Absolutely. The one thing that it doesn't have is a CD-ROM or a DVD-ROM drive. That's, again, to cut down on space and battery
consumption. That's all right. Apple have been there and done that. You go and hijack somebody else's, don't you?
Yeah. You do, and it's not all that bad. You just, if you need to install applications, do it over your network or somehow using a USB device.
USB devices are common to do that.
Absolutely. Comes with a trendy little sleeve. It fits in your bag, as we said. It costs around $700 Australian dollars.
So. Fantastic.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
there you go. The Tech Talk Radio laptop of the week.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Hey, you remember recently Google let a bit of a firecracker off in the form of a rocket. It went up and it's got a satellite on it.
Oh, is that what this is about?
Yeah, there's a new website up which is called Google I.
You better get
it
right.
I'll get it right. It's called
the website.
It's G-O-I. Sorry, I'm dyslexic tonight. I can't. That's why, Anyway, if you want to have a look at some of the pictures that's coming from Sergi and all those guys' new satellite, go and have a look. And there's some new stuff there which they've published just recently of some fairly high-detailed, high-resolution images of good old planet Earth. to the point where you can almost see number plates on cars. Now, I reckon the military might have something to say about this.
Hang on a minute. No, I had a look at this image, and I had a bit of a critical look at this image, and it looked to me like it was not that much more detailed than some of the highest resolution ones already on Google Earth.
Yes, yes, true.
And when I read the blurb, it said that the resolution was a half a metre. So, half a metre
is not bad.
Yeah, but you're not going to be able to read anything unless the letters are several metres wide.
Come on. Conspiracy theory here. Let's say you put a satellite up and it can't do really good pictures. Watch this space.
Yeah, I'm just saying what they've published is half a metre.
Yeah, okay.
So, GOI is GEOEYE.com.
.com, yes, which is the new website for...
And they're about to get a flood of traffic from all our listeners.
Absolutely, and there's plenty of them out there, including Sarah Palin. Welcome to Sarah Palin on the chat tonight, too.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Now, I'm glad Sarah Palin has joined us on the chat this evening. You can come along and have a chat to her at chat.techtalkradio.com.au because the odd spot of the week this week is that spammers prefer Obama to McCain. Now, Democratic nominee Senator Barack Obama has been showing up in 7 times more spam emails than the US presidential electoral rival Republican nomination Senator John McCain. Spam researchers at Secure Computing report that Obama's name was used in dodgy emails, subject lines, 7 times more than McCain's last month.
Presumably, the spammers think that you're more likely to click on something that says Obama.
Okay, I'm sorry, Sarah, but there you go. Oh, she's logging off as we speak.
Hi. Thanks for dropping in.
I thought that's quite humorous. Anyway, the Americans go to the polls, I think, first Tuesday of November.
And it's not soon enough.
Lid said she'll be glad when it's all over. She's sick of it.
I couldn't handle if our Australian police...
Well,
we did last
year. We hear too much about it. Yeah,
absolutely.
But Americans, if you're listening, go and vote, please. Your country needs you.
Absolutely. All right, you have been listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan, and our very special guest this evening was George from Domain Central, which is just great. And have a listen next week. We might have something for you from them. Anyway, until next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron Panelists, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.